A remarkable thing has happened since our last podcast with Lackey Moore. Celtic didn't win a game domestically. In fact, not only did we not win a game, we actually lost a game for the first time in 70. But the sky didn't fall in and the world didn't stop turning and we're still top of the league. And you and I have been lucky enough to witness one of the most remarkable things in over 100 years of Scottish football. This is a Football Fans Podcast and the people behind CelticUnderground.net. I'm Harry Brady and this week I'll be talking with Hull Boy. We knew that we would lose because we couldn't just keep going and winning forever. It was a wee bit annoying that it was at Tynecastle and even more annoying that it was Craig Levein, but you know. Shit happens, we've lost, let's move on, see what we can do for the rest of the season. I'm sure we're going to win the league by a comfortable margin and we're still on track for back-to-back trebles, which would be quite remarkable. But the most important thing is that we all celebrate the fact that we were around for this once-in-a-hundred-year event of Celtic going so long unbeaten. 69 domestic games unbeaten, and we've just lost our first game in 70. So, decided to speak to Hull Boy. We do a bit of review of the game, pick up where we think there's some issues, and then we talk about, in general, the great thing about Brendan and this winning run. Anyway, enough of me. Thanks to all the suggestions that we had for new music. This was from Justin Thunderlager McComsky 90 on Twitter, who has provided us with the debut single for Adam Glenn called These Towns, and that's what's playing under me speaking just now. At the end, I've still to decide, so I'll tell you at the end. Anyway, enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady, with him, Hull Boy. So I'm joined now by Hull Boy at this funereal event of Celtic actually losing a game of football. How are you doing, Hull Boy?
I'm fine, Harry, thanks. We'd forgotten what it's like to lose a domestic game.
I don't know if you saw on my timeline, actually, a bit of the, this is how bad, talking about we'd forgotten how bad it is to lose a game. About some teams who've forgotten how good it is to win.
Mm.
Just before when they were starting to get excited about the potential of a title race, I got tweeted by a Rangers fan who said, "Have you managed to win four games in a row all season?" And actually, we haven't. I subsequently discovered. But I said, I don't know. I've been too busy noticing that we just won our fourth trophy in a row, 69 games unbeaten, and have got European football past Christmas. So his articulate reply was to call me a bead-rattling see you next Tuesday.
Right, okay. Yeah, fine. Yeah, I've not heard that one before.
So, yeah, he was wanting to do an Olympic lap of honour won four games in a row, I think was the thing.
Yeah. Well, who can forget those scenes at Fair Hill when they qualified for Europe before getting knocked out by the fourth best team in Luxembourg.
Yeah, we've lost one game of football, so we're going to talk about the fantastic once-in-a-lifetime, once-in-a-hundred-year event that we've all lived through of 69 games unbeaten. But first of all, let's talk about Sunday's game.
Yep.
So what were your thoughts?
Well, I mean, obviously disappointing with the result. I think whatever was going to happen now, you know, at some point the record was going to go. And, you know, people never really think about the record going until it does go. And you thought that, you know, I've seen over the past few months, you know, people say, oh, yeah, well, it'll go on a dubious refereeing decision or, you know, something of that order. But actually, yesterday it went because we just were very, very poor. And anything that could go wrong kind of did go wrong. And I just think the whole setup of the game, you know, there's no excuses, but the pitch, various other things, just kind of with an accumulation which kind of pushed us to that defeat. The heaviness of the defeat was a little bit surprising. But I must say, I kind of, even in the first 10 minutes, watching the game, just thinking and saying to other people watching it, you know, this just doesn't look good. You know, the way in which the team was kind of set out, the lack of, I think for me, the basic lack of dominance of possession, which if you look back over the period that Brendan's been with us, and you know, maybe some of the earlier games we didn't have as much possession as we enjoy latterly, but that just wasn't there from the beginning. And Scott Brown, normally so dominant on the ball, just wasn't getting a look in, and I think that was partly down to his own performance, but partly down to the way in which Hearts set themselves out.
You're saying everything that could go wrong did go wrong. I rewatched for coming on the podcast, because you watch a game with different eyes live than you do when you know the result. And I just watched the 4-minute highlights package that we are graced with in Scottish football. Three of the four goals, one of our players fell on his ass, slipped.
Yeah.
Tierney for the first. Was it the first, third and fourth?
Yeah.
Tierney for the first. McGregor gets caught in possession for the second at the halfway line.
Simonovic for the third.
For the third. And Lustig
for the fourth.
For the fourth.
Yeah. And actually somebody did mention the pitch was very soft, which you can't tell looking at it, but the pitch was not in good quality at all. It makes you wonder what they've been doing at Tynecastle while they've not been there. But
probably had a whole load of diggers, porter cannons, and bits of wood sitting on top of it.
Exactly. But essentially, you know, what people were saying was, well, you know, if you, and it's not an excuse, but if you've not got the right studs in your boots for a soft pitch, then you know you are going to be slaloming and skiing around the place, which is what happened. But I think, you know, there were too many other things as well. I think Brendan maybe got his team selection wrong, and that's, you know, something that I don't think I can ever recall thinking. In his time here, I think the fact that he went with Griffiths, I've got a theory why he went with Griffiths, and I think the theory is that he thinks that Griffiths will be more motivated against what effectively is his own personal biggest rival.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't show anything, and I mean Brendan said himself after the game that, you know, the team just lacked any physicality, and they were closed down much more quickly than they have been in many games. But even when they are closed down in other games, they've had the ability and the confidence to actually pass their way out of the problem, and that didn't happen yesterday. Now, ironically, we often ended up passing our way into more problems.
Yeah, and, you know, so we can analyse the game to death.
Mm.
The fact is we lost and the unbeaten run went. One of the things I did notice, because I was sort of distracted in the first half, doing some stuff, but the whole of the second half, we just seemed to be, our passing of the ball went out the window, and we just seemed to be launching the ball long.
Yeah.
In the second, just hoofing it up the park, sort of football, the very type of football that when Scotland didn't qualify for the World Cup, Brendan Rodgers said that Scottish football has a mentality of 25 plus years ago about playing a flat 4-4-2 and hoof it up the park stuff for defenders.
You actually see the outcomes of that in the stats, in that Celtic's possession yesterday was only just over 50%, which is incredibly low relatively for a Brendan Rodgers team. And one of the reasons for that was kind of launching long ball, just aimless. And I think it maybe got to the point where Celtic thought, collectively, if we get one goal back, I'm talking about when it was 2-0, if we get one goal back, that just might spook the opposition and we might get back in the game.
Yep.
But then when it went to 3-0, no, it was kind of good night at that point.
Yeah. So, a lot of people who... The other thing I should... Before we leave the game, the other thing we should talk about is the fact that the fans stayed to the end.
Yeah, I thought that was tremendous. Two things. One is, obviously, Brendan getting the players together. You know, getting down in the huddle. We don't know what's said, but obviously that is around kind of... It's almost... starting the healing process for the next run, you know, and kind of, you know, instilling that kind of will to win and that determination. But you're absolutely right. The support, kind of like, you know, giving their kind of tribute and their accolade to what has been achieved over 69 domestic games. It's phenomenal. So that was really good to see.
Do you know, I was thinking, I saw something today which reminded me of what we could do. You know how when you go past a building site and they'll have a sign outside and it's number of days since the last accident, and it's like 89 days since the last accident, which you always think looks awful if you go past one and it's one or two.
Yeah.
But maybe we should have a sign at Celtic Park: number of games since our last domestic defeat, and we could start it again on Wednesday night and start it at one.
Exactly. And it's funny, I was thinking about that because some people see me on Twitter, you know, and a lot of people have been doing it every time we've kind of notched up another unbeaten game. You know, people are putting the number up. I mean, the official Twitter account is doing the same, you know. So if we manage a draw on Wednesday, you know, it'll be 0-1.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
not that any of us are wishing for a draw on Wednesday. We want a comprehensive win.
Yes, I would. Which then gets back to those people who've maybe been most critical online that I've read since the defeat, which was only yesterday. Their comments have been, this has been coming because we've been crap all season. We've not been playing well all season, which, getting back to my earlier point, we haven't won four domestic games in a row all season. So do you think it's yesterday was a culmination of our domestic form to date?
No, I completely refute that. I mean, I don't think that we've performed to the same high level for as long as last season, but I think yesterday was completely out of sync with anything that we've seen under Brendan domestically. Don't think we've seen a game like that. Even when we came back in the 4-3 game against Motherwell, we were dominating the game for long periods. It's just that they, you know, they managed to get some decent goals that day. But yesterday was like nothing else that I've seen since Brendan came into in terms of domestic football. So I don't think you can make that link of yesterday to being how we've performed over this season. I mean, you see all kinds of things like, you know, oh, Scott Sinclair's not doing as well as he did last season. But look at his goals, look at his assists. And what happened in Brendan's first season was he blew the rest of Scottish football away because the style was so different from what anybody has ever seen in Scottish football. And other coaches, managers, teams, just couldn't live with it. Now, Celtic are playing, regardless of what people think about the standard, Celtic are playing in a professional environment. And nobody can tell me that coaches, managers of other clubs haven't sat down and studied how Celtic played last season and are always thinking of ways in which they can combat that for this season when they meet them. And it's even more noticeable because you end up playing some of the teams four times a season. So, you know, other teams, you know, we'll look at how they can kind of stifle Celtic and do things differently.
Well, that was one of the things I was going to ask. Do you think one of the challenges of being a coach in Scotland is, I always remember hearing an interview with Ray Wilkins about how much he enjoyed being in Scotland, but after 2.5 years at Rangers, I remember him saying, I knew Paul McStay's inside leg measurement because we played Celtic that many times. Mm. And playing in Scotland for 2.5 years was like playing 5-6 years down in England because you're playing the same team so regularly. So do you think it's a lot more challenging for a coach to stay ahead of the game because we effectively have had 3 seasons now of Brendan Rodgers' style of football in terms of the number of times opposition teams have played us?
Yeah, I think that's the point I'm making. It's the kind of familiarity. So you know, regardless of what you think of standard, the coaches in the Scottish Premiership are going to be working, you know, in the build up to games against Celtic, watching their own team previously perform against Celtic, and working out with their own squad of players how they actually combat what Celtic do. Now, as a lot of people have said, pundits, supporters, that is still incredibly difficult or very difficult for a lot of teams. But they will improve on that. And I think, you know, let's say that Brendan has a kind of, you know, whatever happens after Sunday, but let's just say that Brendan and Chris Davis feel that, you know, the Celtic team is starting to get stifled a little bit. I've seen enough from Rodgers in individual games over the 69 unbeaten run that suggests that he's got enough to actually start to think, not just in terms of short term how to change it, a game during a game, but also thinking ahead in terms of, well, how do we set the team up differently so that we actually kind of wrong foot opposition coaches who think that they've sussed us out.
So,
you know, I think people, you know, football's a simple game,
yeah.
but actually, you know, there's a reason why people are being paid fairly good amounts of money, even in the Scottish game, to actually manage Scottish Premiership clubs. You know, they're not stupid. It's not standing on a touchline like Sunday League football, shouting at 11 players running about. There's a strand of sophistication to it, and that has actually increased because for all we see, some of the old traditional physical elements in Scottish football, technically, the game is getting better. The way in which people play the game in opposition teams. I mean, you know, I saw some of the football from Hamilton earlier in the season where they scored a really decent goal. But that's about their squad of players getting technically better. And younger players that are coming through, we saw it a little bit yesterday, with Hearts, younger players that are coming through are actually being coached and watch football players of the generation ahead of them doing different things to what happened 20, 25, 30 years ago.
I mean, the only thing I would say, and this is not a sour grapes comment, it's something I've observed for quite some time about how a team will perform in a certain way against Celtic and not in against some other teams in Scottish football. Yep. And we see that when Johnny Hayes is a standout for Aberdeen and struggles at Celtic. One of it is the difficulty of the mentality of playing at a big club like Celtic. But the other thing is, teams play differently against Celtic than they do against Aberdeen.
Correct. And
Craig Levine made a comment that he had studied Anderlecht, how Anderlecht had pressed us high up the park. And there's two games he talked about he'd studied. And I thought, that's good that you're doing that. But then they think, I had no idea who Hearts are playing on Saturday. But I did wonder, will you study to the same level, say it's Hamilton, you mentioned Hamilton, will you study to the same level how Hamilton play for and prepare your team with the same level of detail to face Hamilton that you do against us?
It's an interesting one. I mean, we're speculating on that. I mean, you know, again, I still say that professionally, that there will be the preparation for each game, regardless of whether it's Celtic or Hamilton. But by definition, there's two things that go on. And if you've played football at any level, if you are going to play against better players, your mindset kicks in that you want to actually show that you are as good as them.
Mm-hmm.
That's a given. All the years that I was playing football, you know, if I knew that I was playing against a team that was of a higher calibre or doing well in that particular league at that particular time, you wanted to, you know, just the old cliche, but you wanted to raise your game against that team. And that's just human nature in terms of competitive sports. So there will be something in that, and again, you can't underestimate that the longer Celtic's run has gone on, that all the other teams in the league, or if they face Celtic in the cup, will want to be the team that actually ends that record. It's the nature of professional competitive sport.
Yep. Now, in relation to that. So that's other teams facing up against us. I think I've messaged you a couple of times that I thought this season, and you mentioned the end of last season, some of our poorer performances have been down to complacency. And I don't mean that in a blasé, we go out and just the very nature of being a human being and the fact that you are beating everybody every week and you know that your colleagues are better than anybody else that you're facing. It would be odd to think that they can go out onto the park with the same high level of motivation every single week.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think there is just that feeling that you know, if you go behind in a game, you know, the record itself shows that if that happens, the team. And I mean the collective in that sense, whether it be substitutions or changes in formations and tactics, there's always been something there that has actually kind of pulled them back to either kind of equalise in the game or very often go on to win the game if they've gone a goal down or even two goals down, as we saw against Motherwell.
Yeah.
You know, I think probably yesterday, you know, they maybe go one goal down and there's maybe a little bit of a mindset of saying, well, do you know what? Things will just happen where we'll get back into the game. And that didn't happen. So
yeah, I mean, you know, I'm thinking in terms of when any Celtic team you can think of in the last few years has played a team from a lesser league in a cup game, for example.
Mm.
And we only beat them by a goal or two. And it's because the striker or the creative players just take that extra touch because they believe they've got that extra bit of time to take that touch.
Mm.
The midfielders take that extra touch because they're just feeling that. And that's what I mean by complacent. It's just feeling you've got that extra time because you're better.
Yep. I think the other thing for me as well, and it will be interesting how Brendan thinks about the next few games, but certainly the next game and then the ones in the rest of December, because I think one of the things that a lot of people, I'm not saying they were surprised by, but they were pleased about, was that last season, when we had certain cup games in the past, we've seen other Celtic managers, and what they'll do is they'll rest players, particularly in kind of League Cup games and earlier Scottish Cup games, and they'll bring a few other either youngsters in or what you might call squad players.
Mm-hmm.
And that Celtic team in that particular game has struggled. And in actual fact, what we saw with Brendan's teams last season when he did that, you know, you kind of looked at it and thought, are we going to hit problems again like we did under previous managers? But you actually saw some of those teams blow the opposition away in games. And so you kind of felt that there was this kind of like rotational thing where, regardless of what happened, Brendan would still have a team out there that would be far too dominant and would go on to win the game comfortably. And I think perhaps what we've got this season is, because we've had the injuries and because the squad overall has not been able to respond as effectively, it kind of, in some people's eyes, makes it an argument that there is some kind of slump and that we've had this dip in form. So, you know, that's probably where the thinking comes from. But even if that was the case, you know, the ability for people to hype up the criticism is kind of beyond me.
The other thing that it was my wife having tonsillitis this week that made me think about it. I went through a period where I would be working flat out and I would get to Christmas and I would spend half of Christmas, New Year in my bed with a cold because you'd just been working flat out.
Yeah.
And then the moment you felt you could take your foot off the gas, your body sort of relaxes and things start to go wrong. And that then got me thinking about, I remember a mate of mine as a Rangers fan bemoaning in the Seville season that in the year before that and the Seville season, under Martin O'Neill, none of our key players seemed to get injured.
Mm.
They were fit all the way through, basically until we actually got to the Seville final, if you remember Hartson and Sutton were injured. And then the season that followed, some of those, like Valharen and Mialbi.
Yeah.
And there is a part of me, if I look at this season and compare it to last, I know it, you know, there was a period where both Griffiths and Dembele were injured, but if you look at it, neither Griffiths nor Dembele this season have had a constant run in the team.
No.
Because of injury. And we've not had a settled back four.
No. I mean, that's the thing for me. And as well, you just can't underestimate how intense Celtic's football year is now because of the Champions League qualifiers. And I think it's become more noticeable now. And again, not making excuses, it's more observations, but maybe it's something that the SPFL need to think about. They are absolutely ramming December with fixtures. So you always kind of felt that you know, and people have spoken about this across the support, that December is always going to be a tough month simply because of the number of fixtures. So if you're on a long unbeaten run, then the spotlight is going to be on December even more.
Yeah. I mean, I know they've done it because we want a winter break, would be their argument.
Yeah.
And I know international fixtures come into play and obviously our European calendar. Yeah. But it just seems, Well, I worked it out at the end of November, I think it was. What was it? That's August, September, October, November. That was it. End of November was 4 months, and we played, whatever it was at that point, 14 games or 15 games at that point. And then the next bit of the season is 5 months, where we play 22 games or something. It's just ridiculously skewed at the, at the wrong end of the season in terms of league fixtures. But equally, it was Barca Boy who tweeted the stat, and you know the points I'll get wrong, but it was roughly we've played a game every 4.69 days. And then the next team in Scotland, it's something like every 6.99 games.
Yeah. So and, if you've,
and then Rangers were 7.04 games or some days or something like that.
Yeah. So if you've got if you've got a squad of say 25 to 30, and that's starting to then become depleted, then that really puts a lot of pressure on those players who are fit and playing regularly. You know, and I've seen one or two people mention. I think Remy McSwain mentioned it on the By the Min podcast that, you know, Tierney does actually look physically knackered. You know, and I mean, at one level, you know, it's no surprise that he was substituted yesterday. Not because he'd made any particular howling mistakes, but, you know, he does just look done in. And you've got to protect the players, not just in the short term, but over the medium long term, you know. And I think there's still this whole underestimation of the fitness levels that you need to attain as a professional footballer these days, playing at that level. You know, I think somebody recently said, you know, actually, do you know what? This isn't like the old Saturday, Wednesday setup of professional football of the 1970s and 1980s. This is a modern game where, on average, a player runs twice the distance during a game that his counterpart did in the 1980s.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing frustrates me or irritates me more than, and it tends to be some of the types of poorer pundits we have in Scottish football who sort of have the, well, it was fine back in my day, or it was fine back in his day, and it suited, you know, he could do X, Y, Z, so modern players should be able to do it. And it's just the complete ignorance of the point you've just made, players running twice as much. And again, at Champions League level, for example, the very elite teams then fine-tune their fitness proposition so that their players are fittest in March, because that's when you win trophies, and they do all the squad rotations, so that if you have some very, very good players and you play them every week, that will start to have an impact when you're playing against teams better than you, because their players are rested more.
I think there's just individual nuances as well. If you look at the wide setup of Celtic this season, and it's been really good that James Forrest has been on form this season, and he's done very well. But that's coincided, thankfully, at the point when we've lost Paddy Roberts. Mm-hmm. Now, if you go back to last season, Paddy Roberts had a bit of a dip in form. James Forrest came in and did a decent job in certain games. So the thing is, you didn't really notice anything materially in terms of an adverse effect on the team's overall performance. This season, if James Forrest has an off game, well, what have we got? We've got Johnny Hayes, because Paddy Roberts is, you know, can't come in and change a game. And okay, I thought when Hayes played previously, I thought he had one of his best games in a Celtic jersey. But he's still got a long way to go. If even if he can make it to the levels of Forrest and Roberts, which he probably never will do. So, but you're then into this dilemma of, you know, what do you do? What do you do in the January transfer window? Do you bring somebody in that kind of compensates for that kind of Forrest Roberts kind of equivalence? Well, why? Why would you do that?
Yeah, because, you know, it gets back to the we need cover for Tierney argument. Yeah. Well, who, that's a real challenge. Who do you bring in? Do you go and sign a guy who's better than Tierney? Well, since lots of people will think that Tierney's a £10 million plus player, not to bring in a better player than Tierney, you're then bringing in a £15, £20 million player. We can't afford that. So your other option is, do you then go to a mature-ish, you know, mid-20s guy and say, we're bringing you in to be backup to a 20-year-old?
Yeah.
Who's going to accept doing that apart from a player that's not good enough to play for Celtic?
Yeah, and I think the other thing for me is as well is, you know, a lot of people are saying, and something I've, you know, been commenting on is that, you know, and Cham is getting a few more games, and I think he's a really good player.
Mm-hmm.
But yesterday's circumstances just got the better of him, really. You know, tight pitch, not a good pitch. He still didn't hide, but effectively, it, you know, the circumstances just made him look relatively ordinary. And he's much better than that.
Do you not think, or I did wonder as well, somebody made this point to me that the benefit of losing a game is it was becoming one of these things where the players were playing with a bit of fear of losing rather than the enjoyment of winning, if you can see the point.
Yeah, no, I understand that completely.
And that Brendan, I'm sure Brendan would say, look, the winning run was not the be-all and end-all. But again, who being human would not always have in the back of his mind, yeah, but I don't want to end up playing some kids and they're the ones who end up losing the winning run or the unbeaten run. Do you think that possibly this might release some pressure off some players and also give the manager himself more freedom to make changes to the team? Or do you think that's overthinking it?
There might be something in that. I mean, if you look at the whole corporate approach of Celtic, it you know, they've done it to themselves, really, because they're the ones that have been kind of like, you know, through the official site and official Twitter accounts and social media, they're the ones that have been kind of like promoting the whole unbeaten run, which, you know, we're just happy to lap that up. But actually, yes, that creates an internal pressure. Sometimes managers and players thrive on that kind of pressure. But maybe it has become a little bit of a millstone. And, you know, for me, the big test now is we've got these remaining games in December. I think it will be really interesting to see how Celtic respond in those games.
Well, we'll talk about that in a second, but you mentioned earlier about what we're going to do in the January transfer window. Well, again, if, you know, I think a number of us have heard in the press have talked about it, and Brendan's even not put it down that he wants to sign two centre halves in January.
Yeah.
And the other thing I've heard is he wants to sign a number 10. Part of the reason for a number 10 is because his point is there's no point in parachuting in the best two centre halves in the world if you've not got the movement in front of you in the midfield.
Exactly right. Absolutely spot on.
You've still got nowhere to pass to, and you still have too many lateral passes.
Exactly. One thing that we shouldn't lose sight of, you know, Brendan might set the team out slightly different formation wise, but this Celtic team, what's got them to 69 games unbeaten domestically, is about kind of the way in which the game is played, but it's about keeping the ball and keeping possession. And as you remember, he said very, very early on, it was kind of like, it was a little quiet message to the support that said, just be patient with my team, because you might see them passing around at the back, but actually, and he didn't embellish it to this extent, but really what he was saying was, this isn't about hoofing the ball forward anymore. This is about us wearing the opposition down because we are totally dominant in possession. And when we get it from our back third through the middle up to the attacking third, we will try and have the creativity in our creative players to actually unlock those packed defences if they exist.
Do you know, I often think when sometimes looking at social media, it's the reason why I would never want a job at Celtic or any, because you can't win, you know, you can't please all the people all the time type thing. All season I've read about the fact that we need two centre-halves, and one of the most common themes is people saying, I quite fancy a centre-half who's got experience, who's been there, done that. So compare as, Ray... used to be on BT Sport.
Derek Ray.
Derek Ray, that's it. He's been on the podcast. Dreadful for forgetting his name. Derek Ray has pointed out that you pronounce his name Compare. 32-year-old centre-half who's played over 300 league games in the Bundesliga and has played 15 games in Serie A. Celtic are interested in him. All I read online is, can't believe we're going for a guy who's passed it.
Yeah, like we went for Kolo Touré.
Yes.
Football's all about opinions, and people are going to be very emotive in what they say, but and highly kind of driven in their views about certain things. But for me, bringing in an experienced centre-back who's been playing regularly in high-level European football, it seems eminently sensible to me. Svyatchenko is not a Brendan player.
Mm-hmm.
Boyata, I think, gets quite a fair bit of stick and criticism. I think he's actually a better player than people give him credit for. Simonovic, okay, but I can't tell whether Simonovic wants to be away, and whether the club think that, you know, he is a saleable asset where we would get something for him and we wouldn't lose him that much. And then you've got the whole Nia Beaton thing of whether Brendan really is serious about converting him into a centre-back, as he's kind of hinted at. But that in itself wouldn't be enough. So to go for Compare is quite sensible. And, you know, we need good, experienced footballing centre-backs because of the way in which particular Tierney plays so high up the park.
Well, the other thing you are touching on there about whether he wants to convert Beaton to a centre-half, and with her, you know, again, lots of supporters like the look of Ayer as a centre-half. If you're going to... Beaton's a footballer and an experienced footballer, but he's an inexperienced defender. Ayer is a footballer with potential, but he's learning centre-half. He's been a centre-half for a year. Beaton's been a centre-half for 6 months.
He's 21, Ayer.
Yeah, so actually having a 32-year-old been there, done that, centre-half to play alongside them, if you're identifying those two as potential centre-halves, that's exactly what you need.
Yep. And I think the thing for me as well is, I like Craig Gordon. I think he's a good shot stopper, and he's definitely improved his play as a sweeper type keeper in terms of passing the ball out, but he's still way off. And I think what you saw yesterday was that his ability to make what are called kind of more medium passes.
Mm-hmm.
He was absolutely woeful yesterday, and that's why our percentage possession was so low.
The other thing I've touched on before in the podcast, that, you know, people have criticism of Craig Gordon, and the biggest criticism I would have is I do find, and it goes back to when he was a Hearts goalkeeper, in pressure situations, he has mental aberrations of judgment sometimes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
When to come, when not to do.
Yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
You know, the Hibs game where Hibs nearly scored in the last minute,
yep,
was part of that mental aberration of coming right out to the edge of his box and then dropping it. We've seen it in Europe a couple of times. And I would put the problem with him with his mental aberration thing is his use of his feet when there's a pressure situation happening in games seems to quickly deteriorate rapidly. His decision making on which is the appropriate pass to make, I should say, is what deteriorates. Not his hit now, it's his decision making.
Yeah, and I've said countless times, I think, on this podcast that, you know, football's a team game, and very often you see individuals in a team criticised for their passing, when in actual fact it's not them they may well have made the passing error, but actually it's a teammate who's played them into trouble in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that I do actually see in terms of the relationship between Craig Gordon and the centre-backs. So people are critical of Boyata's distribution, mm-hmm, but actually very often Boyata is distributing, having been put under pressure from a pass that's been given to him by Gordon.
Yeah, and in fact, that's one of my points about, I think a lot of the time players are criticising. Sometimes I look at it and think, and maybe, you know, you'll do it yourself. The first thing you'll do is criticise a player in a game, and then you start to think, wait a minute, that's only because he's involved in play. I've just suddenly realised that X player hasn't been involved for 10 minutes. He's gone missing.
Yeah. It's like in some of the early European games, people were criticising Anchamp. Well, the reason why he was in a position to be potentially criticised was because he didn't go hiding like some of the other Celtic players. So when he was on the ball and the rest of his teammates weren't showing for him, then yeah, he was bound to misplace a pass, but he didn't hide.
You know, and it's been in the last few weeks when I've been thinking about Simonovic and looking at and suddenly started thinking to myself, wait a minute. Yeah, I'm not seeing him making howlers, although obviously he made a mistake on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also not thinking of him making great interventions in a game either. The game, he's sort of coasting through a game, which then got me thinking about, also like Gordon, half the time when Boyata makes a mistake is because all Simonovic has done is just pass the ball to Gordon, to Boyata. Yeah. He's taken the ball and just passed it to Boyata. Boyata passes it back to him and he passes it back to Boyata. He either passes it to Boyata or Lustig. That's all he does.
Yeah. Yeah. And to be fair, because Scott Brown's played out of his skin for the last 18 months, he actually has taken pressure off the defence on quite a number of occasions. You know, when he just sits there deep, or on the occasions that Boyata or Simonovic or Nia beat on when he's playing, you know, that Brownie just sits in there.
So we've had a bit of criticism. So what would be a couple of highlights of your 69 game unbeaten run?
Yeah, well, I mean the thing is, you can't uncouple the 69 unbeaten run from winning the treble. So I think you just automatically look at, you know, down the years people have talked about absolutely memorable Celtic moments, but you know, number one is Rogic scoring in the cup final. It's just, you know, I mean, that'll just live with me forever in terms of the whole experience of that moment of, you know, one small event, if you like, became so incredibly important to Celtic's whole season in terms of what that meant. You know, that, you know, we were looking at kind of extra time and whatever, but just in that moment of pushing on, right at the last minute, releasing the shot, and effectively, you know, that gave you one full season of unbeaten domestic football, and it also gave you a treble. You know, so you can't buy that. You can't package that. It's phenomenal.
Any other moment?
Yeah, well, I think as well. One thing that we got in the first season, and I touched on it earlier, is that in the games like the Motherwell game, we'd been used to seeing a Celtic team over the previous 2-3 seasons where if they went behind in the way that they did against Motherwell, that they didn't have the inner strength or the resilience to actually bounce back from that and rescue something from the game. So I think the fact that we not only kind of pulled back level and then went behind again, but then we went on to win the game is just, you know, that for me was the kind of the big message that went out from Brendan Rodgers' team that says, do you know what? We're never beaten. We're actually going to keep going right till the end. So, you know, that's just a couple of highlights. I think you can talk about games against
2-5-1 games.
Yeah, I was just going to say those two games that were just they were just absolute strolls in the park, and I think particularly the first one where, you know, you've got all of the media hype around them being back. They've got Joey Barton, they're mouthing off everywhere about, you know, this is going for 55, and, you know, we absolutely annihilated them that day. And one of the funny things is just it's resurrected itself actually over this season in that, you know, some people were starting to question Lustig in terms of his, you know, his fitness and his overall contribution. But, you know, one of the things that we like as Celtic supporters is, yeah, we like good footballers. We like players who give their all. But we also like characters. And in the modern game, Lustig is just, you know, he's just become a cult figure.
Yeah.
And I would go back to that game where, you know, you don't spot it until later. You see Lustig running past Joey Barton with a beach ball on his head. Where have you ever seen that at a game of football? It's just amazing.
So. It's why I know Lustig's not the perfect right back, and I know, yeah, you know, he gets caught out in European football. He's not, you know, not good enough, to be honest, at the top level, Champions League football. But I love Lustig playing for Celtic.
Absolutely, and you know, we talk about when the unbeaten run would end, but, you know, it didn't end against Hibs because Lustig was absolutely immense in that last ditch, last minute save.
Yeah.
When the goal was completely exposed, and I don't think any Celtic supporter at that moment would have thought, do you know what, we're going to get out of this. I think everybody would have just thought, that's Hibs 3-2 up. Yeah. And it didn't happen, and that was thanks to Lustig. So as I say, I'm reluctant to be overly critical of individuals in a team game, and I don't put too many individuals up on a pedestal. I think I can recognise a decent player, but I still love players that bring character, because you don't see it as much these days in, you know, not just at Celtic, but across the game. So, yeah, I like Lustig.
I'm going to go on to just very briefly what you think of Chapter 2 of the Brendan Rain after this defeat, where we do. But I just thought it'd be appropriate at this point to go through the two lineups of the last two Celtic teams to lose a game domestically.
All right, okay, yeah. Have you got those, have you?
I do, so...
Wow.
11th of May 2016, St Johnson 2, Celtic 1. Griffiths put Celtic 1 up. We'd won the league, it was Ronnie Dyler's second last league game.
Yeah.
Griffiths put Celtic 1 up, and then Stephen McLean and Graham Cummings scored for St Johnson, and the Celtic team was Ingalls, Logan Bailey, or Bai, as his name should be. The defence was Izaguirre, Sviatchenko, Ambrose, and Sadie Yanko. with Tony Ralston. Tony Ralston started and Janko came on.
Oh, right, okay, yeah.
I tell a lie. I'm just trying to read this and get it right. It was Ralston came on for Sadie Janko. So that was our back four. Izagiri, Janko.
Janko, Sviatchenko.
Ambrose.
Effie Ambrose, well, yeah. And Effie's whole head had gone by that time, hadn't it?
Yeah. The midfield, Callum McGregor, Stefan Johansson, Ryan Christie, Scott Allen.
Scott Allen, the legend.
Yeah, 1, 2, 3, yeah, Scott Allen. With Roderick coming on for Allen and Beaton coming on for Johansson. And Griffiths up front.
Wow.
So that was...
Where's Scott Allen now?
He's on loan to Dundee. He's still a Celtic player.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, to be fair, that team was very much giving fringe players a run out. Leo Fassan was on the bench. Kieran Tierney, Anthony Ralston, who came on. Tierney didn't come on. James Forrest, Leo Fassan, Tom Rogic, who came on. Stuart Armstrong, Nir Beaton, who came on, were on the subs bench.
And do you know what? Everybody around that time was saying, Johansson wants to be aware, he's lost interest. I've seen him a few times playing for Fulham. Actually, he's a decent player. I don't think Fulham are going to go up, but I think probably Johansson could still play in the Premiership in England.
Mm-hmm.
Not a bad player at all. But yeah, I mean, the other thing for us then, we were just talking about Armstrong at that time and saying, you know, this guy, just why did we sign him? You know, what is he bringing to us? So there were so many negatives about, I mean, we're talking about some of the players who are not with us now, but there were also so many negatives about players who actually, when Brendan came in, he transformed them.
I mean, the other thing I'm noticing about that team is we had Griffiths on the park and no other striker. No striker on the bench.
Mm.
Whereas on Saturday, we had obviously Gordon in goal, Tierney at left back, Lustig at right back. Boyata, Simonovic, and Jan Brown, Sinclair, McGregor, Forrest, Griffiths. But we had Eduard and Dembele on the bench.
Yeah. I mean, Griffiths didn't do anything on Sunday. But again, if you look at him in terms of his completeness as a player compared with when he was playing under Ronnie Dyler, I mean, yeah, you can talk about all the goals that Griffiths scored. But if you remember, when Brendan came in, he was very quick to point out and say, do you know what, I don't want to talk about the fact that Lee Griffiths scored 40 goals in a previous season. It's about what he does going forward. And obviously he had that period out in the cold. And I have to say, I'm still not convinced as to whether Brendan fancies Griffiths for the long term. I think come the summer it might be quite interesting as to whether Brendan feels that, it depends what Edouard does in the second half of the season, but whether he takes that up, that option to buy. But yeah, I mean, completely different to what we had. Interestingly, Ronnie Dyler was part of the 69 game unbeaten run, wasn't he?
He was, yeah. Two games, I think. Or was it one game?
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's the team. That's the... What do you see going forward for the next... we've got four games. We've got Thistle, Aberdeen,
yep. Aberdeen,
Dundee, Rangers.
And Rangers, yep.
What do you see happening?
Sounds kind of quite... laid back, but I think three of those four games we probably should be quite comfortable, and I think the one where there is going to be a kind of added dimension of of pressure is the Aberdeen game. I watched them against Hibs. They're obviously settled again because, you know, their manager's not going anywhere and probably never was, actually. But essentially, I still think Aberdeen are a decent team. I'm not keen on McInnes, not keen on some of the things that the Aberdeen support bring with them in terms of the baggage. But actually, they are still the second best team in Scotland. And simply because, on paper, it looks quite close points-wise. I know, obviously, we've got the game in hand. Then I think that'll be a big test for us. But you know, again, Brendan's always talked about, along with Chris Davis, how they actually do the preparation for each game. Sometimes, like yesterday, it goes completely out the window because players don't perform to what they're told to do or the level. But I think, if we get through those four games in December, and even if we drop a point maybe against, or drop 2 points maybe against Aberdeen, which we shouldn't do really, I think that sets us, that should in theory set us sufficient points ahead to just keep pushing on after the January break. I think then we're into the unknown of what's it like for a Brendan Rodgers team to play both domestic football and European football in the second half of the season.
Yeah, we're going to find that out. And it'll be interesting. I do think the last couple of seasons, last season, I thought you saw some changes, you saw some personnel changes, you saw someone who was on the fringes of the squad, like Boyata, becoming the first team player, having gone away and had the winter break. Not so much the season before under Ronnie Dyla, because we were on a sort of downward spiral, but the season before that, in Ronnie Dyla's first season, again, you saw a benefit to our team playing much better after the winter break. Yep. Do you think we'll see the same?
Yeah, I definitely think there'll be a rejuvenation. I mean, we touched on it earlier, but you can't underestimate the intensity of Celtic's first half of the season. And by the time you get to this time of the year, still with four more domestic games to go, that's incredible intensity. So by definition, if you think about it, I think I'm right in saying that actually now the January winter break is longer than Celtic's summer break.
Yeah, it will be.
I think that's right. I think they were only away for, was it 2 or 3 weeks in the summer? Whereas, you know, I know they're not away all the time, they're back at Lennox Town training in the January, but effectively, it's, you know, it's 4 weeks of non-competitive football.
Well, it'll be interesting to see. We get the game against Partick Thistle midweek. What do you think the score is going to be?
I mean, by all accounts, Thistle are pretty poor at the moment. So, and you've just got to expect that Celtic will. There'll be a kind of a big backlash from Sunday's result. So, I would think a fairly comfortable win. I'm going to say 3-0.
Okay, do you want to give me the scorers or give us the scorers?
I'd like to see Dembele on the score sheet, Edouard, and I think just because I think he could really be a player for us, I'd like to see Ncham in the team and for him to get one.
Okay, well, with that, I will say, Hull boy, thanks very much.
Thanks very much, Harry. Good to speak.
Cheers. I'll have a blue. Hope you enjoyed the podcast with myself and Howlboy. I thought I'd have one of the coolest men in the history of the planet singing from his comeback concert in 68, Elvis with Blue Christmas, as a car version, one of the recommendations from Twitter the other night. As mentioned in the podcast, we've got the Thistle game on Wednesday night. Should have some audio from the press conference at the back of that. If we don't, I'll wish you a Merry Christmas. If we do, I'll wish you a Merry Christmas again after I picked up the audio from that on Wednesday night. This is me, Harry Brady. That was him, Hullboy, saying good night and God bless. Good night. Summer blue, just thinking.